You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
All roads lead to the Purple Project Podcast.
Triple P is all about the happenings across Kansas State Athletics in Manhattan, Kansas.
Football, basketball, and everything else in between. K-State is ready to compete with top teams among the Big 12 Conference.
The kickoff of the Purple Project Podcast starts right now. Here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
K-State Nation, what's happening? Welcome back to another edition of the Purple Project Podcast, the weekly edition, second episode of the week for you guys. If you're new to the podcast, welcome on board of the show, where we talk all things K-State Athletics. My name's Eddie Greer, host of the Purple Project Podcast. I'll introduce my co-host in just a moment. Of course, this podcast is brought to you by the AutoFest 2022 inaugural car show, a little less than a month away here in Manhattan, Kansas. It will take place on the west side of town by the Midwest Car Collection Center on the west side of town, which I do live on the west side of town here in Manhattan, Kansas. So definitely, if you have a classic car you would like to enter and you like to come, it is a $10 registration fee, and spectators coming to this event or free of charge. There's going to be plenty of activities in between. Registration starts at 8 o'clock in the morning. And this is, oh, by the way, August 6th, folks. So pretty much a month out from that. So exciting stuff from there as well. The Rally in the Valley, part of AutoFest 2022, coming August 6th. And that's going to be a big weekend for K-State, as K-State will kick off officially. Well, not officially, but you might as well say officially, with a soccer exhibition match on the same day as the car show. So definitely a big day to go around. So make sure you, K-State Nation, definitely plan for that as well. Before I bring on Alex on, of course, you can find the Purple Project Podcast wherever you get your podcast, whether it's on iTunes, Spotify, and a couple more podcasting platforms out there, Odyssey out there, Google Play. Make sure you add the Purple Project Podcast this summer to your collection of K-State podcasts out there, as well as we're slowly starting to crank up here the 2022-23 K-State Athletics season. Big 12 Media Days around the corner next Wednesday. I'll have my post thoughts on that on the dailies coming up next week. But for right now, that's taken care of. Finally, episode 108 is about to get into it here with my co-host who lives in San Diego, Alex Aiden. Alex, what's happening?
Not much, Eddie. It is the weekend. Excited about that. Happy Avery Johnson Day. Wait, that was Tuesday. Sorry. Got my days mixed up. Actually, I'm kidding. No, I'm still celebrating Avery Johnson Day. Eddie, that was a really exciting day on Tuesday when we were able to go on the podcast and discuss Avery Johnson and all things. But I did say that if quarterback that shall not be named committed to K-State, I would pour a stiff drink for them and have it on the show. And I did not live up to that on Tuesday night. I'm really hard to be honest. it was a busy week with work, a lot going on. It was a busy week. I just forgot to have a drink. So I'm making up for it tonight. So in honor of Avery Johnson, I have here a Latitude 33, which is a local brewery out here in San Diego. A good local brewery. Lots of good local breweries, actually, out here in San Diego. I got a Latitude 33 Blood Orange India Pale Ale in honor of Avery Johnson. So I will consume this beverage during the podcast in honor of Avery and him committing to K-State. So I'm holding up my part of the bargain on having a stiff drink for Avery and coming to K-State. So there you go. There you have it. But as I was telling you here before we jumped on, that it looks like Jackson Fulmer, who is one of the top offensive linemen in the state of Idaho, is going to be announcing tomorrow where he's going to be playing, and K-State's near the top of his list. Some players hinted at the fact that he may be coming to K-State. He is KSO's recruit of the week, so we'll keep an eye out tomorrow, see if K-State can lay an alignment to that class. It looks like he is the number three ranked lineman in the state of Idaho and number seven in the country on offensive linemen. So that's where he lines up there. But we got a lot of things to dive into. And by the way, you mentioned the Rally in the Valley. What a great weekend. You go to Rally in the Valley, you go watch a little soccer, you can make it an afternoon. Just make it a Manhattan afternoon.
Yeah, yes, definitely. Make it an afternoon for sure. In the middle of that, I should say, yeah, I got the registration starting at 8 a.m. for the Rally in the Valley, and of course, right in the middle, perfect timing, with the SAR game, exhibition game for K-State soccer against Missouri State at 1 p.m. Central Time. So, there you go. And of course, to even elaborate that even further, there's other exhibition game for K-State women's soccer. Will be Wednesday, August 10th, same time, 1 p.m. Central Time. They go on the road, actually, to play Wyoming before kicking off their official 2022 schedule against, right here in Manhattan, Kansas, Buser Family Park against Northwestern. So,
woo! Oh, that's no slouch to begin the season.
No, it is not. It is not.
Jumping into the deep end, I see.
Yep, going right to business, right off the deep end, baby, with Northwestern right off the bat. So, we'll talk about soccer as we get even closer to that. So, not going to waste any time, head coach Mike DeBeni of the K-State soccer program over there. So, coming off of a 6-win, most in K-State program history up to date. And again, they look to trend in the right direction, but a tough opponent to begin the 2022-23 campaign for K-State women's soccer. So, in prime time, might add you, 7 p.m. at home. Definitely, K-State Nation, come out, show your support for the Cats. And this is not going to be the last time that we promote this as well, because we love to promote our K-State sports here on this podcast, a.k.a. ESPN Plus. So...
the worldwide leader of sports. Yep. But we need him, Eddie. We need him because ESPN Plus, that's where the games are now, man. That's where the games are.
Yep, that's what it is now. So definitely, if you're not subscribed to ESPN Plus, you have that. It's not expensive. It's very affordable. If you definitely want to tune in to watch your K-State sports, on that as well. And going over to volleyball really fast, their season premiere will be August 19th against Wayne State at home in Brainless Coliseum. Of course, they're building a new volleyball facility, obviously. So they'll be back in Brainless to open up the season. That's going to be 6 p.m. against Wayne State. And for those of you who don't know who that is, that's in Nebraska. So there is that. And staying on topic with the volleyball team, of course, with K-State football preseason rankings coming out earlier this week, might want to retouch this up really fast here. Alex, I know I talked about it in the recent daily a couple weeks ago, somewhere in there anyways. K-State coming into the year, I know we talked about their schedule, Alex, on recent editions of this podcast. Now we'll talk about, get your thoughts on the preseason ranking. And K-State entering 2022-23 season ranked just in the second half of the conference. And I didn't realize that, and maybe I should have earlier, but Oklahoma State does not have a volleyball team for whatever reason that is. But nine teams, K-State is preseason ranked sixth behind Texas, who is number one, eighth place, first place votes. They're number one, preseason number one. Baylor received a first place vote. And then goes like this: Iowa State, KU 4, Texas Tech 5, then you have K-State 6, TCU, West Virginia, and OU dead last to start off the preseason there. And obviously we talked at length about the K-State roster a little bit, but obviously Aaliyah Carter is on the list. I know I talked about this on the recent daily somewhere in there. If you have not gone back and checked it out, please do that. Leah Carter is on the preseason team on Big 12 for the third consecutive year in a row, led by her. They got a few transfers and a couple of good, nice recruits over there as well for the Susie Fritz volleyball team this year. And, of course, they have a couple other key contributors as well coming back to the team as well. Alex, first, as we focus on the volleyball team for a little bit, what do you think about that sixth place selection there?
Yeah, you know, yeah, I think that's about what I expected, to be 100% honest. I look at the rankings, and I kind of see the Big 12 in three tiers. You know, obviously Texas is number one. That's no surprise. I think that we all could have predicted that Texas was going to be number one, and Baylor going to be number two. They're typically two of the top teams in the conference, so no surprise to me that they're one and two. That would have been my guess. And for me, like I said, Eddie, again, I move kind of as three tiers, and that top tier is Texas and Baylor. I kind of think that they're on their own tier. And in fact, I think you could possibly even say Texas is on a tier in themselves, and because they're just so dominant in volleyball. Mm-hmm. But I'll throw Baylor there. Baylor's kind of a tweener. I feel like they could go in the first or second tier, but I'll put them in the first tier for now because they're typically got a really good volleyball team too. And then that middle tier, I really view as Iowa State, KU, Texas Tech, and K-State. I think that those four are kind of in that middle tier. And then I think TCU, West Virginia, and Oklahoma are kind of in that bottom tier. That's kind of the way that I see it. And I mean, you know, looking at the votes, as I get something stuck in my eye, right on cue. Literally, my eyelash decided to just get my eye right when I needed it. When you look at the points for the ranking scale for one through nine, 1 point separating Iowa State and KU, 1 point. You got 7 points separating KU and Texas Tech, and you got 3 points separating Texas Tech and K-State. And if you look at Iowa State at three and K-State at six, you'll have 11 points separating those two schools. I mean, that's a really tight middle of the pack, and I think that that's going to really create a lot of competition. And, you know, even looking at Iowa State at three and Baylor at two, I mean, there's only 7 points that really separate Iowa State and Baylor, so that's why, again, why I say Baylor could kind of be a tweener. There's a bigger gap between Baylor and Texas than there is Baylor and Iowa State, but that I really think, Eddie, that's about right for them. We saw K-State; they were picked, I think, third or fourth last year, and they kind of underperformed a little bit. And we came on the podcast, we talked about kind of how surprising you know, see that in a Susie Fritz team, and so it was, you know, we were kind of wondering how are they going to respond, you know, what are they going to do? We broke down their schedule, we looked that over. It's a tough schedule. They got a tough non-con, but I think that non-con is going to prepare them for Big 12 play, and I think it will prepare them for some dogfights there in the middle of the pack. I think it's fair. I think K-State deserves probably about middle of the pack, if not a little bit lower, based on what they did last year. I don't really think they've earned a ranking to slide in there to three or four, kind of in the Iowa State or KU level. But I think K-State has the ability to play up into that position if they can play to their ability. Because I think you and I both will agree that they just kind of never play to their ability. Kind of like the women's basketball team a couple years ago. Jeanette kind of never played to their ability, and I kind of view the volleyball team the way I do the women's basketball team. I could see them having that type of bounce back season the way the women's basketball team did last year. I could see that with the volleyball team this year. I just think that there's enough talent on that roster to do that. So eager to see what happens there. But yeah, I think it'll be tough for them to compete with schools like Texas and Baylor. But when you look at schools like TCU, West Virginia, Oklahoma, I think K-State needs to be able to take advantage of them. Win matches against them, and you know, put themselves in a position to get an NCAA tournament bid.
Yeah, and I gotta correct myself here on the schedule. So I said season premiere of Wayne State. That's gonna be an exhibition game on the 19th next month for the volleyball team. But still, Brandon Lynch Coliseum will still be Brandon Lynch, but it's an exhibition game against Wayne State, and then their opener will be the K-State Invitational on the 26th of next month, August. That's a Friday afternoon, lunchtime start against Sam Houston. And then, of course, they're playing two games on the same day. So you got that early matinee, Sam Houston. And then NC State in prime time, same night, 7:30 Central Time. All those games will be in Ramblings. And then, of course, the following day. So you're playing, and I'm going to finish this up for first, in Florida A&M the next day on Saturday, 12:30 Central Time. And if you're living on Alex time, you can figure it out yourself. But anyways.
Rewind 2 hours.
That's a 10:30 start then, if that is correct there. Woo! Yep. So early in the morning volleyball, for those of you
interested in that. That's bad. Wait till you got the 11 a.m. starts out there. That's 9 a.m. here.
Woo! Yeah, that Missouri. For K-State football.
Like watching your football game with a cup of coffee right out of bed.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, this is going to be the K-State Invitational right here. So, obviously, that will be huge. That's a big deal for K-State in general here. So, you want to do well in front of your home fans here as well. So, I'm not going to go as far as that. But there you go with that. Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. But that's an interesting perspective, Alex, that you have there with the comparing the volleyball team to the women's basketball team. And I like that comparison a lot here. So, if they can come close to what they did, not last year, but get back up to where they were the year before, they'll have a chance to win some of these games. And obviously, we noted their non-con schedule. They have some pretty big, tough teams in that. So, be interesting to see. Obviously, there's still a little bit of time. Still about a month and a half, less than a month and a half-ish for K-State Volleyball. So, we'll be talking about that quite a bit around the football season as well. And, of course, Jerome Tang getting ready for his first full year here at Kansas State. The head coach, the new head coach for the K-State men's basketball team. With that, Eddie Greer, Alex Aiden, episode 108 of the Pearl Project Podcast weekly edition. As we continue the preseason theme, going right down my notes here, back to football. And the hot topic here in Manhattan, at least, is the preseason ranking. And earlier today, we have not downloaded the Football Friday little mini daily that I've been doing the last month or so with Football Friday. Definitely download and check it out. K-State has the most players on the All Big 12 first team with 6. And on the flip side of that, now you go to the kind of the maddening side a little bit. You are picked 5th in the preseason on Big 12 preseason standings there. Obviously, I've looked back. I've actually started to dig a little deeper into all these other rosters, Alex, as we start to get a little bit closer to football. I've started to dig a little deeper into returning stars, whatnot, for each of these teams. Obviously, Baylor is the preseason number 1, the defending Big 12 champs there. And then the question mark here, right off the bat for me, in my opinion anyway, OU sitting there in second, Oklahoma State, 3rd, Texas there. Texas and K-State have the same returnees coming back. 6 on offense, 6 on defense there. And then the funny one behind K-State, little old Iowa State. Got a first place vote. But, however, I did read an article on ourathletic.com. They are returning. They did lose their big key contributors. No more Brock Purdy. They ain't got to worry about him.
Yep.
Breece Hall lost him to the Jets to the NFL draft. You ain't got to deal with him. I believe they lost their tight end as well. One of their tight ends as well. Top of that. But
they lost a lot.
Yeah, they lost a lot.
They lost a lot.
They lost a lot. And they got a first somehow. Iowa State got a first place vote.
First place vote came from.
And K-State did not get a first place vote. I don't understand that. And K-State has more players on the Big 12 first team preseason than Iowa State does. I don't understand that whatsoever. TCU, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and KU. I actually agree with, I can't remember who said this on the 3 Mob Pod that I just watched before coming on here. I want to say it was Cole Manbeck. I'm not really sure. I would probably put KU ahead of Texas Tech because Texas Tech has too many changes at the head coaching spot. Disarray. Sorry, Texas Tech fans out there. But KU is what they did last year. They took a step forward. I mean, whether you like we like it or not, but look, let's be honest here. KU took a step forward, knocked off a Texas team that we didn't beat last year, that we should have beat. Not going to go down that avenue right now, but KU, I think they should have been ahead of Texas Tech because, yeah.
Interesting.
So that's just my opinion right there. West Virginia, you don't know what you're going to get out of them. That's probably about right. So I would probably switch KU with Texas Tech. That's just my opinion there on that. Oklahoma State, back to the top half for me. And they've been the most consistent team. Now, obviously, Baylor has come on, obviously, with Dave Miranda the last several years. But Oklahoma State, they've been really consistent year in, year out. They produce, obviously, good teams year in, year out. But they lost a lot, including, I didn't know this, by listening to their three-mod pod again. Good stuff again, John Kurtz, D.Y., Derek Young, and Cole Manbeck. Oklahoma State apparently lost their defensive coordinator as
well. Yeah, they did. So. Yeah, he went to Ohio State, I believe.
Interesting.
I think he went to Ohio State. I mean, somewhere in Big Ten country. Pretty sure it was Ohio State.
So that's a huge loss right there. You figure Oklahoma State's going to be right there up in the mix again. Everyone obviously loves Tex for whatever reason there. And what they bring to the table there. And then there's little old K-State. So anyone paying attention about K-State? About, oh man, K-State's going to be, we need to be looking out for these guys. Well, we don't even get a first place vote. Not one. And Iowa State does. So, yeah. But anyways, yeah. Alex, what are your kind of your thoughts there? A little bit here. K-State kind of, you know, if you're going to not give K-State a vote, you might as well just put them down. Switch. I agree with Cole Manbeck when he said, you might as well just put us down in preseason 7 or 8. Really lit the fire on our butts a little bit. Really fired up this fan base up here in Manhattan, Kansas about it. But it's about right. Fifth place for K-State right there. You could easily flip-flop Texas because Texas, you don't know what you're going to get out of them year in, year out, especially lately. So I think you and me kind of probably would agree with D.Y. and Cole Manbeck and John Kurtz. You can really either go 4 or 5 there.
Yeah. You know, Eddie, I've heard a lot of people gripe about where K-State is on the preseason poll. Rightfully so, because, you know, they've got more preseason All-Big 12 players than any team in the Big 12. They've got the preseason Defensive Player of the Year on their Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year on their team. They've got who I consider the best running back in the country on their team. I understand Bijan Robinson's a beast, but I still would take Deuce personally. In the NFL, I would take Bijan, but in college, I'd take Deuce. And so, I mean, I get the frustration from people, and especially when you've got a bunch of media outlets talking about, man, this K-State team could be really, really good this year. They could win the Big 12. Like this is a really, really good team. You know, there's been a lot of that pump up. So, you know, I get it. And the Big 12 is wide open. There's not a clear front runner this year. So when you throw all those factors in, I understand why people would expect the K-State to be higher on this list than where they were. For me, I agree with you, Eddie, and I did catch the 3-Mod podcast, and I typically agree with Derek, John, Cole as well. You know, the thing is I really didn't have much of a problem with this, to be 100% honest with you. And part of the let me backtrack, Eddie. I had a problem with Iowa State receiving. Why on earth is Iowa State receiving a first place vote? I mean, come on, man. Everyone picked them to win the Big 12 last year. They went 7-6. You know, they had the regular Matt Campbell 7-1 season. You know, the annual 7-5. And, you know, move on to their day. That team's never now won the Big 12 conference. Come on, man. That team's never won a Big 12 conference. I'm sorry, man. If they were going to do it, it was going to be last year. They didn't do it. Maybe they'll surprise us, you know, in a couple years. I know they got some good recruiting classes. But I'm sorry. Matt Campbell seems to go 7-5 every year. The COVID season was the exception. So I don't know what evidence there is to say that team would win the Big 12. Chris Kleiman has done more with less than what Matt Campbell has done. He's won 8 games with a couple of rosters that
Absolutely.
I just don't understand. And I think part of it, comes to the Matt Campbell hype and the hype around that program. I think that program has been kind of a little overinflated. I think that might be why. I'm just going to be honest. They've gotten a ton of exposure and attention. I don't exactly understand why. So, yes, they have kicked K-State's ass the last 2 years. I will not deny that. But K-State had kicked their ass like 10 years before that. So, it's a deal where I don't know where they got that first place vote. No idea where that came from. Little surprised K-State did not get a first place vote. I thought that they may get one or two. But all in all, their spot, I really didn't have a problem with it, Eddie, because you look at the Big 12, it's wide open. Baylor in first, I actually thought that was about right. You know, they won the Big 12 last year. They went to the Sugar Bowl. And I can't remember if they beat Ole Miss or not in the Sugar Bowl, but they went to the Sugar Bowl, they have got Chapin coming back, who really came on strong for them last year.
That's the quarterback that we're trying to think about, right? Yeah,
Chapin. Yeah, it was Chapin. And so he's coming back. I think he's going to be really good. They did lose some players on the defense side of the ball, but I think Dave Aranda is a really, really good coach, and I think he'll be able to fill it in. I think Baylor will be there near the top. So I didn't have a problem with Baylor at number one. Oklahoma number two was interesting. I don't know how I feel about that, Eddie. There's so many new faces on Oklahoma's team this year that there's just so much unknown. There's so much unknown on their roster. There's so much unknown in their coaching staff. I'm just not exactly sure what Oklahoma is this year. I'm not sure if they're going to come out and be just the dominant force that they are, or if they're going to legitimately be a worse football team than Kansas State. I don't know. I mean, I'm really not sure what they are. But I do think that they probably got some votes based on their logo, you know, and their brand. I don't think there's any denying it, because when you look at rosters and pure talent, at least on the surface, it would appear that some teams behind them have more talented rosters based on production in the past. Again, I understand why they're at two. Would I have put them at two? Probably not. But I understand why they're there. Oklahoma State at three, again, you know, they lost a lot, and I get it. But I think Derek Young did hit on it really well. Every year he's like, I think Oklahoma State's out of it, and I think that, you know, they're going to drop off, and they never drop off. They just don't. Mike Gundy's a really good coach. He always finds a way to get those players, the most out of his players. And so I just assume at this point that Oklahoma State's going to be near the top. So them at third, I don't have a problem with that. And Texas at fourth, Eddie, I don't really have a problem with that either, because they do return the same number of players as K-State, but you got Quinn Ewers coming in there. You got Bijan coming back. You got some star-studded recruits coming in, which, yes, Texas has them every single year. I get it. But you can't deny that this Texas team has got a ton of talent. I think that they're more talented than last year's team by a significant margin, primarily because of the quarterback. And so, again, do I think that Texas is going to win the Big 12? No, I don't. Do I think, though, Texas is going to be potentially playing in Arlington? It wouldn't shock me. It would not shock me. Yes, Texas does Texas a lot. I would not be surprised at all if they choked and bowled to Texas and finished the season 6-6 or 7-5. But with the talent on that roster, I actually am pretty bullish on them. And so, you know, I look at K-State at fifth, and I think, did they deserve to be higher? Yeah, they probably did. But then I look at the four teams ahead of them, and I say, well, I mean, who would I put them ahead of? And it's hard for me to find a team to put them ahead of. That's the thing. I look at it, and I'm like, I wouldn't put them ahead of Baylor. I still wouldn't put them ahead of Oklahoma, despite what I just said. I look at their roster, and I feel like they have a better roster than Oklahoma State, but I still think Oklahoma State's going to be there. And I look at Texas, and I'm like, Texas does have a better roster, but they're Texas. So it's hard. It's hard. And I think that is what's going to make this season so fun, Eddie, is that we just talked about 1-5, and I'm legit like, this team will probably be up here, but I'm not exactly sure. And this team, I'm not sure. There's a lot of unknown, and I think that's just going to make this Big 12 season so great and so crazy, is because there's no clear front runner. And it's going to make for a lot of great Big 12 games, a lot of meaningful Big 12 games, And that's something that I'm really excited about. The one thing I will say is I do think that the break-off line, I shouldn't say the break-off line. We talked about tiers with volleyball. I said I saw three tiers. I see a couple different tiers here. I definitely see like a top half and bottom half. I think that 1 through 5, Baylor, Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, K-State, I think they're going to be on their own tier. And then I think Iowa State, TCU, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and KU are going to be in a different tier. I understand that Iowa State got a first-place vote, and I understand Matt Campbell's a good coach, and I think Iowa State will be competitive, but I don't think that they're going to be as good as K-State. And I don't think they're going to be on K-State's level. I don't think that they're going to be on Texas's level or Oklahoma State's level. I just don't think that Iowa State's going to be there. I think they'll be more on par with what we'll probably see from TCU, West Virginia, Texas Tech, and KU. I know what you said about Texas Tech and KU. I actually think Texas Tech might have a decent season. I think that I can see them winning 6 games and making a bowl game. I can't see that from KU. I can't see them winning 6 games and making a bowl game. Because Texas Tech, they do have a top 15 recruiting class at the moment coming in. And so, again, how many of those players will be able to play this year? Probably not a lot. But I do think Joey McGuire's a good coach, really good coach. And I'm curious to see how he's going to coach Texas Tech up. And I do think Texas Tech has more talent than KU on their roster. So, I do like Lance Leipold. I do think he's doing a good job at KU. He's actually doing a great job recruiting at the moment, but I think he's a decent coach. And so I think that he can coach them up and get them to maybe 3 or 4 wins, but I just can't see him getting them up to potential bowl eligibility. And I can see that in Texas Tech. I think all 9 teams ahead of KU all have the ability to be bowl eligible teams. I just can't see that from KU. I can't see it. I've heard John Kurtz mention it multiple times. I agree with it. I think there was a little bit of overcorrection on KU, and I don't know what happened. I do keep seeing lists that have Lance Leipold listed as one of the best coaches in the Big 12. I've seen people say KU's going to go 7-5, and I'm like, what? No, I don't get something. Literally, Bill Connolly with ESPN wrote an article, asking whether or not Lance Leipold can do what Bill Snyder did at K-State, and he said he thinks he can, and I'm just like, what are you guys talking about? Like, just stop. Like, what is with this overcorrection of KU? So I don't understand it. I'm not on board with it yet. They need to prove it to me. They need to win more than 3 games in a season, Eddie, for me to buy that. But, all in all, I think that this list is relatively accurate. If it was me, I probably would have K-State a little higher. I don't think I'd have Oklahoma at 2. I think I'd have Texas at 2, to be honest. I think I'd go Baylor 1, Texas 2. Baylor 1, Texas 2, Oklahoma 3, K-State 4, Oklahoma State 5, and then keep 6 or 10 the way they are. That's probably what I'd do. I'm tempted to kind of even put K-State ahead of Oklahoma because I feel like K-State may have a better roster. But here's the thing, and this is why K-State leads the Big 12 in all Big 12 players, but they're 5th. I've talked about this before on the podcast, and I will reiterate it again. I've talked about it all summer. You take K-State's 22, starting 22, you put it against any other starting 22 in the Big 12, I'll take K-State's. I'll take K-State's, I think, over any starting 22 in the Big 12. I really do. They're loaded. They are loaded at the starting 22. But the depth is what scares me. The depth is what's got me concerned. And that's why I feel like K-State's season, Eddie, is going to be really, really dependent on how healthy they stay. Because if they can't stay healthy, I think that the lack of depth could really hurt them. And if they can stay healthy, then that's the scenario where I could see them potentially winning the Big 12. I really think that their success is largely determined on their health. And that's kind of scares me a little bit, but it's also exciting knowing that they've got 22 players that are that good starting. So you look at some of these other teams, Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, Baylor, Texas, they have more depth. All 4 of them have more depth than K-State does. I don't even think there's an argument to be had there. K-State has more front-end talent. Those teams are deeper. Those teams can withstand injuries more. So K-State, in my opinion, is playing with fire a little bit more than those 4 teams ahead of them just because of K-State's lack of depth. I think that's why K-State's 5th. I think that's why those teams are ahead of K-State, and I think that's why you see K-State with so many players with all Big 12 honors, but you see them fifth in the rankings. And it's just the truth, Eddie. We could be wrong. A player could come out. A player could pop. That absolutely can happen. But let's not act like K-State's, you know, just caught fire with their last two recruiting classes. They haven't. They've got depth issues. I mean, they've got good transfers. They've got some good players in. But there's depth issues. It's just the truth. And they've had depth issues ever since Chris Klieman's been there. I think they're on a good track to correcting that issue with the recruiting that they've been doing here the last year and a half. But they're not there yet. I just think that they lack the depth. Again, they got some good transfers, and I'll say that. If some of these transfers can pan out, that can help a lot. But I think that's why you see K-State at 5. It's just because the depth is going to be the big question mark, and it's just not quite as big of a question mark as the other four teams, even if they maybe don't have that top-end talent that K-State does.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Alex, did you just make a bold prediction that K-State's going to win the Big 12 here in 2022?
No, I did not. I did not make that prediction. I did not. I said if they stay healthy, they can win the Big 12.
All right. Yeah, that's...
Not they will win it. They can win the Big 12. I will go ahead and I'll debunk that right now. I don't have them winning the Big 12. I'm sorry. I'll be straight up with you all. Actually, you know what, Eddie? I don't know who I have winning the Big 12 yet.
Yeah, I haven't gotten that far yet.
It's too early. It's a little too early for me to say. I doubt K-State will be it. I would be pretty surprised if I picked them. But it's wide open. It is wide open. But they can. They can win the Big 12 if they stay home.
Yeah, that's the key, and that's the other key word that we
were
talking about.
You're going to go back and listen and see if exactly what I said. You're probably going to come back next week and be like, no, you said that they will win.
I didn't say that yet. Hold on. I didn't say that yet.
You're going to be like, I went back and I listened to the tape. I heard what you said. It's like that episode. You always go back when you quote that episode when K-State beat KU. And we're like, hey, they're going to win the Big 12.
Well, we both sat there and said it, so.
Yes, you went back and you listened to the tape, and to this day you let us hear it. So you will let me hear the tape again if I did misspeak there.
Well, anyways, yeah, it's a little too early, though. I do agree it's a little too early for that right now. But, yeah, I do agree. I mean, the depth is still, even though, yes, we had a big week, a few good weeks recruiting, but still... coming in this year, we still have unfinished business with the 2022-23 season that's going to be upon us here in a few couple months. And, yep, depth is still the issue. And it seems like the word that's been floating around our podcast, depth, I mean, got to have it. And that's why probably Texas, Baylor, OU stand the way they are every year. You can get thrown Oklahoma State in there as well on three. Who also keeps up with recruiting mainly, put out their power rankings yesterday, and they had OU at number one, Texas 2, Baylor 3, Oklahoma State 4, and then, of course, the consistent K-State is 5. And then West Virginia, Iowa State, Texas Tech, TCU at 9.
Interesting. A little low for TCU. That's a little low for TCU, in my opinion.
KU 10 was consistent. But, yeah, TCU bumped down their ranking there, especially with their returning quarterback, Max Duggan. So,
And I will say, I think I'd swap West Virginia and TCU. I think I'd put West Virginia at 7, TCU at 8. You know, I think JT Daniels is going to go in there and be a good quarterback for them. I just think he's got a higher upside than Max Duggan. I know we haven't seen him. In a while, but I'm a little more bullish on West Virginia than on TCU. I think TCU will be good. I think it'll be better, but 8's a little low for West Virginia. They lost some guys. I get it, but 8 seems a little low for them.
Yeah, so again, here in early July, we're still working out the kinks to figure out which football team is going to be good coming in come September 3rd. Obviously, K-State's first game at home against South Dakota at the Bell. In prime time at 6 Central Time, folks, for that one.
And he'll be there.
And, I plan on being there. Yep, that is the plan for right now. I plan on being there, yeah. So, definitely excited for that. Obviously, continuing on our outline sheet here. We've been talking about quarterbacks the last two shows. And we'll just talk about the backfield briefly here. Obviously, Deuce Vaughn is one of those guys that is going to go with Chris Klieman to the Big 12 Media Days next week. He, Adrian Martinez, and another offensive player that I can't remember who. And then Eli Huggins is the defensive representative for K-State right there. We had recently Anthony Frias II on this podcast. Make sure you go back and check that episode out. I'm not going to give away any spoilers. Definitely, that's a must listen there. Go check it out. But he and DJ Giddens in that backfield. Again, going back to the whole recruiting week, it's been a huge, huge week. A good month of recruiting for K-State. We're not even going to see those guys until next year. Again, got to focus on the guys we have on the 2022 roster. And this is the guys that we have other than Deuce Vaughn. Frias II, Giddens, the freshman. Frias II is a sophomore. And then I looked down the roster, found a Weathers, his last name. I think it's Davion Weathers, a freshman. And then, of course, the fullbacks. You have Jackson Eane returning, obviously, and Christian Moore, sophomore fullback, as well. So when you look at backfield, it's nothing outside of Deuce Vaughn. Obviously, I'm excited to see what Frias II is going to do. Giddens is supposed to be. I heard some good, solid things about him, but we know about Jackson Eane. So I don't know. I haven't seen Christian Moore that much on the field. I don't think. But yeah, outside of Deuce Vaughn, the big question going in this offseason was, can you have the depth? There's that word again. The depth on, yes. In the backfield. Well, you got some of that answered, and you have that question answered even more for the future of this program, right? So we know what Deuce Vaughn can do out of the backfield. That's been well. Obviously, for the last couple of years in entering his junior year as one of the best players in this conference, the Big 12 conference I'm talking about. And the question is, with the new look offense out, we know what Deuce Vaughn's going to give us week in, week out, dangerous in the backfield and as a pass catcher. But what are these other guys going to do? I can't say much again, just like the basketball team for Jerome Tang. I can't really say much. All I can do is read all of these little stats here and there and figure out, okay, is this guy's going to be good? Be an impact player or not? And I probably would say the same thing for these guys as well. Jackson, for the exception of Jackson Eane and Deuce Vaughn. Jackson Eane, he's going to be an impact player. He's going to get to carry the football maybe here and there. The Colin Klein, new look offense. Wants to attack the defenses. We've heard that quite a bit. We've seen it firsthand against LSU. We whooped up on them. Deuce Vaughn, you're not going. Everyone's not going to rely on Deuce. You're going to have to rely on the balance attack, I think, Colin Klein is striving for. So you got that. We got a little sneak peek in the Texas Bowl earlier this year. And I'm looking forward to seeing more of it, actually. If it wasn't for Deuce Vaughn, you'd probably get his backfield. again, I haven't seen these guys in person yet.
Yeah, that would be scary.
A C. And that's maybe blunt, but yeah, I haven't really seen much. But with Deuce in there, I give him a solid B. So yeah, that's a big difference. See what I'm talking about? Where Deuce Vaughn, you lose Deuce Vaughn. You lose a big piece. And having Adrian Martinez and Deuce Vaughn, that's going to give, we said this before, we'll probably see it again multiple times heading into the season. That's going to give defensive coordinators nightmares how to defend Adrian Martinez and Deuce Vaughn. So, Alex, what are I'm already going to know what you're going to say about Deuce Vaughn, but what are these other guys? What are your thoughts on this backfield room here coming in the 2022 season?
I be seeing what you saying about Deuce. I be seeing what you saying. I don't know why I felt triggered to say that once you said the BC thing. I don't know why. By the way, to answer the question about who's going to Arlington, the four K-State players are Adrian Martinez, Deuce Vaughn, Daniel Green, Eli Huggins.
Okay, yeah, there's the other one. Okay.
Yeah, they're the four. With running back, Eddie, I think this position is a perfect example of what we were just talking about with the entire roster. You've got arguably the best, running back in college football, and you've got no idea behind that. So, I mean, that, again, that's a pretty good description of this football team, looking at the running back position itself. You know, it's not going to be what Chris Hunt typically does, you know, having rotating backs and trying to keep guys fresh and do that type of thing. It's going to be Deuce, 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 and some more Deuce. That's what it's going to be. Deuce is going to be on the loose a lot this year, hopefully, as long as he can stay healthy, knock on wood. So, you mentioned with Deuce, yeah, he speaks for himself. He's a beast. I don't think there's anything else he can prove, to be 100% honest. We know what he does. We know what he can do. We know what he will do, as long as he's healthy. So, I think what we've seen him do, he's going to do. He can take this team. He can put him on his back. He can carry this team. I really do believe he's got that ability, especially if they can get competent quarterback play. Quarterback play that can make his life a little bit easier and loosen some things up for him. I really think the bigger questions, as you mentioned, are behind him. You know, what's going to go on there? I believe that Anthony Freias is really going to be the bell cow behind him. That's what I think. I know they got a couple other backs. I've heard some talk about a couple of them, but I think that they brought Freias in for a reason. I think they brought him in to be the change pace guy, to be able to take some carries away from Deuce, be able to get him a breather when he needs it, be able to move Deuce so maybe Deuce can light up in some different spots in the field. And look, before they brought Freias in, we were just kind of talking about it. We need another back. We need a back. You know, they're moving Jackson in a running back, and you know, they're talking about, well, we don't know if we can get a transfer because who's going to want to transfer in and play with Deuce, knowing that they may not be able to get, you know, be the main back, like, where are we going to find this? But there's a lot of this talk, and you know, I don't think you're looking that hard for a running back if you're confident in what you've got behind Deuce. So, and also we see how hard they're recruiting the running back position right now. They've literally gotten Dylan Edwards. When they got Joe Jackson, they're still going after John Randall. Like, they're hitting the running back position hard right now, which I think is another indication that they probably don't have a ton of faith in what's post-Deuce. They, you know, they're loading up on Deuce right now. So, again, I just don't think there's any signals that the young backs are necessarily what they're looking for. I really think that it's going to be Deuce Vaughn and Anthony Freias. I think that's what it's going to be. I think Anthony Freias can be a good back, a good change of pace guy. I think that, you know, it's still to be seen. But he's, you know, he's got a really good attitude. He's got a really good mentality. He runs hard. And look, K-State's got a good line. They got a good line. I think they're going to open holes up. And as long as he can hit those holes, then he can, you know, get some positive yardage and be able to spell Deuce some time and allow him to move him around. I think that's all he really needs to do, as long as Deuce is healthy. You know, Deuce gets dinged up. That's a different discussion. Then you're talking about possibly having to recreate some of the offense and some of the things that you do and trying to find some ways to supplement the loss of Deuce Vaughn, because no one can you can't plug anyone in and have them just, you know, replicate what he does and do what he does. So that's where I think it would get hairier. But with Anthony Freias in the role that I think he's going to be in, I'm pretty comfortable with that. Again, I think Chris Kleiman's shown that he's got a good eye to find these veteran running backs. You know, he did it with James Gilbert. He did it with Jordan Brown. He did it with Harry Trotter. They've recruited well, looking at Joe Irvin and Jerkady Wright. A couple guys who have had nice ceilings. So they've showed that they can identify running back talent, particularly the transfer ranks. So I think Anthony Freias, again, we talked to him on the podcast. Go check it out if you haven't. Hear what he has to say. He's got a great mentality. He really has a good mindset. And I think that with the mindset that he has, that's going to translate onto the football field. I think it translates into the weight room. I think it transfers out into the practice field. And I think it's going to translate out on the field and game day. You know, when you go about things the right way, Eddie, you're going to have success. And I think he goes about things the right way, and I think that he's going to do what they need him to do. And you mentioned Jackson Dean. They'll sprinkle him in, probably in some short yardage situations, some goal line situations. And let's not forget that Adrian Martinez has got good legs, and he can run the football as well. And he can be, at times, kind of a de facto running back as well. Not saying that you want Adrian Martinez being a running back, but he does have the legs and the ability to scramble and hurt teams with his feet. So, I do expect Casey to utilize that some, too. Let's not forget, we're calling Klein's butter while he was quarterback. He ran the football a lot. So, I think he knows that that can be a useful tool. You don't want to beat your quarterback up the way Colin Klein got beat up, but I think that he knows it's a useful tool and it's got a time and a place. So, I think that K-State will be able to utilize that as well. So, ultimately, I'll give a B+. Eddie, I'll give a B+. I won't go quite A just because there are questions. There's unknowns. There's unknowns behind Deuce. But I got confidence in Anthony Freas to be able to do similarly to what Joe Irvin did last year. Maybe not quite to that level, but similar. Joe Irvin was really good last year. I don't know if I'm expecting quite Joe Irvin, but in the ballpark of what Joe could do, maybe to a little bit to a lesser extent. We'll see. But I get confidence for him to do the job that he'll be asked to do in that offense. I do fully expect, like I said, to be him. Maybe you see some younger running backs in there, but I doubt it. Not consistently anyway. I think the way we'll see for us. And then Deuce is going to be Deuce. Deuce is going to be Deuce. But I will say, you're right, Eddie. If you take Deuce out of the equation, yeah, I 100%. This is a C-. It's not good. It's not good. No offense to Anthony Freas, but I don't think you want him to be your bell cow. If he's being your bell cow, I think something went wrong, and I think that the offense is going to be in trouble. I think that that's going to limit a lot of what they can do, which is why they would have to recreate some things and put a lot more pressure on guys like Malik Knowles and guys like Phillip Brooks to go out and make plays. And they would probably be getting some tighter coverages. And also, it would also put pressure on AJ Martinez, who has a bunch of question marks. Maybe, force him to possibly turn the ball over, getting some of the bad habits. So, that's why I think you can't give it an A, is because if you lose Deuce, it just things could go to hell. But I do think that the way that it's currently constructed, that they can be really, really effective in the run game. So eager to see the way it pans out, and cross my fingers they stay healthy at that position, because running back is a hard position to stay healthy at.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
That's probably why K-State coaching staff and recruiting team are trying to stack up on that running back position.
Can never have enough running backs.
No. That's for sure. This is the Pro Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 108. Eddie Greer, Alex Hayden. Yeah, so we'll find out. Obviously, we'll talk more about Adrian Martinez as things move along here, getting closer to September 3rd with the home opener against South Dakota. And just going on a detour here real quick before I have some notes on women's basketball here. The top 10 Big 12 players. Deuce is, and this is the same site that I'm on 3.com. Deuce is number 9 on this list as top 10 Big 12 players. There, Bijan Robinson's number 1. There's 3 Texas players here. 3 K-State players. 1 Baylor. 1 Iowa State. And 2 Oklahoma players. The other Texas players are Quinn Ewers, you mentioned him at number 6. Xavier Worthy, we saw him a little bit. Wide receiver. Yeah,
really good player.
Yep, wide receiver. He's at 7 here. And our guys, Cooper Beebe, number 2. Felix, number 3. You remember I mentioned Deuce Vaughn at number 9 there. And to kind of fill out the rest of this top 10 here, Xavier Hutchinson, we saw a lot of him last couple of years, Iowa State. He's number 10. And Anton Harrison, offensive lineman, he's number 4. And Marvin Mims, wide receiver there, he's going to be helping
also
out.
Also very good.
Oh, yeah. And he's going to be probably one of the bigger targets for Dylan Gabriel on that OU offense there. He is number 5, if not the number 1 target for Dylan Gabriel and at Brent Venables' OU team there. So, so K-State well represented there. Obviously, Purple Nation stand up. Well, K-State Nation stand up because there's another Purple team in TC. We're not talking about TC. We're talking about K-State.
Get your Purple right.
Get it right. K-State Nation stand up. We have three represented right there as well. So just a lot of talent up and down individually when you really break it down. This Big 12 conference there. So Deuce Vaughn, definitely a key piece for his offense this year for K-State. Eddie Greer, Alex Zane, this is the Purple Project Podcast. Moving along here, we're almost getting to the red zone part of the show. But before we do that, obviously, this is presented to you, this podcast, by Rally in the Valley, August 6th, the inaugural AutoFest 2022 taking place here, West Side, Manhattan, Kansas, taking place in the parking lot of the Dream Car Collection Center, Midwest Car Collection Center over here, West Side of Manhattan. For those of you who are outer townies out there interested in coming, if you do decide to come, make sure you mention the Purple Project Podcast sent you over here to the inaugural car show. That's going to be something else. Looking forward to that as well. Okay, so
Eddie, I was waiting for you to be like, if you mention the Purple Project Podcast, you will get a 15% discount on your admission to the car. Just tell them we sent you. But you didn't. So
I did not do that. So I left that part out. But no, just kidding. just kidding. Just kidding. Meanwhile, not kidding about women's basketball. Obviously, at the Recorders Podcast, tomorrow begins the 3-on-3 USA Basketball Nationals. We played in Springfield, Massachusetts, and there's going to be KC Women's Basketball represented in this. They put together a team last year, and they put together a little team again this year by awesome trio was now sophomores, Serena Sundell and the Glenn twins, sisters, Briley and Jalen, and of course, newly senior transfer, Gabby Gregory will be on this team as well. Exciting to see her in action. And backup center to Ayoka Lee, Taylor Lauterbach, also on the team. So they're going to be going at it in Charlotte. Well, actually, yeah, so Charlotte, North Carolina, these games. So I take that back, actually. Excuse me. So it's not Massachusetts. It's going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina. And these games will be taking place tomorrow and Sunday. So when this podcast comes out, we're going to know a little bit more on how our girls did, our ladies did, in the first day of this tournament. The 2022 Red Bull USA Basketball Qualifier in Charlotte beginning this weekend there as well. Jalen Glenn averaged 5, to remind people who've kind of been, if you haven't paying attention to postseason lately of women's basketball, Jalen averaged 5, just over 5 points a game there. Sundell also went, I think I'm reading this wrong a little bit, but anyways, I'll have to double check on that later. But anyways, the main thing, these girls will be back in action, and Gabby Gregory will have a chance to introduce herself, if not already, to Briley, Jalen, Serena, and Taylor as well. So I'm really excited to see how she does with some of her teammates in this opportunity to get better as well. So the first team to 21 in these games will win. So for those of you who don't know, it's going to be a half-court game. 3-on-3, and this is kind of reminds me of the Big Three put on by now forgetting his name, Ice Cube. There we go, Ice Cube. I like to watch that. I really like that. So this is gonna be half court game, 10 minutes on the clock, and you're gonna have a 12-second shot clock in the first team of 21 points, or the team in the lead at the end of regulation is the winner. So, and more information on this in partnership with USA Basketball. Approximately 10 men's and women's qualifier teams are being held around the country, plus 4 regional championship events, which will help identify a new pipeline of 3-on-3 talent who have a goal of competing in the 2023 Red Bull USA Basketball three-time Nationals. And again, if you want more information, folks, you can check out www.redbull.com/3x for more information, as well as more on the newly teammate Gabby Gregory, a 2020-2021 academic All Big 12 first team selection a year ago, and a unanimous Big 12 All Freshman Team honoree. She joins K-State following three seasons at OU. During her time with the Sooners, Gregory saw action in 72 games with 46 starts in there as well, and she has compiled almost 2,000. Let me repeat that, K-State Nation: 2,000 minutes of action. That's an average of almost pretty much 27 minutes a game right there as well. Gregory notched 785 points there. That's equivalent to 11 points a game. Her field goal percentage is 39% there, with a 3-point field goal range from downtown there of 33% from downtown as well. She's an outstanding free throw shooter, and she tallied a free throw percentage of 85%. Yeah, so we know that K-State does well from the free throw line as a team anyways, and she was perfect from the field, not from the field, from the line, 16 of 16 from the line in 18 games a year ago with Oklahoma. So Jeff Mitty landed an impact player. We talked about me and Alex, we know we talked about her a little bit a while back when she made a decision to transfer here to K-State, but just diving into the numbers, a little bit deeper into the numbers there. Now, this is why I'm kind of bullish on this women's team going into the fall, this upcoming fall. You need another score to take the pressure off. I mean, we talked about this a lot at the end of the year when K-State kind of faded down the stretch there. You need someone to take the pressure off Serena Sundell and especially Ayoka Lee. I'm definitely interested, really intrigued to see how Jeff Mitty is going to use her with Ayoka Lee, or how she's going to incorporate herself with Ayoka Lee and Serena Sundell, and of course the rest of the gang as well. So I'm really excited about this get for K-State basketball, women's basketball.
Exactly. I mean, you're right. That's exactly what we talked about, was when they sputtered last year on the second half of the season, they couldn't get offense. They couldn't get scores. It wasn't necessarily that they could get stops on defense. Granted, their defense was not great at times. More than anything, it would be huge scoring drops that would put them in a bad position, and everything fell on Ayoka Lee, and it fell on her shoulders, and she would have to go make a play. And if she didn't have it going on, this team could really find themselves in trouble. Their offense just wasn't quite consistent enough. Granted, they had a lot of young players. I think that we acknowledge that, but I think being able to add that add another scoring element is something that is really important, and it is really really vital, and something that's going to really benefit them, and just give again Jeff Mitty another tool in the toolbox to be able to maximize this team. Because let's remember, this is it with Ayoka Lee, right? I mean, yep, this is. Yep. We're taking the swing. I mean, this is the season to take the swing with Ayoka Lee, because once the season's over, she's gone, and you're not going to be as good. Let's just be honest. You're not going to be as good once she leaves the gym. So you want to do everything you can to maximize her time, maximize her talent, and being able to have a transfer of that impact, be able to come in, be able to score the basketball. It's something that provides a lot of benefits. So being able to have an opportunity like this to go out and to play with Riley Glenn, Jalen Glenn, Serena Sundell, I mean, that's an opportunity to gel with some of the other teammates on the team, even though it's a weird brand of basketball. Look, it's going to make you better. It's going to build chemistry, camaraderie, and really help you. So I think that this is just something that benefits the basketball program. And, you see it just in general. I mean, whenever whenever a basketball team partakes in something, whether it's a USA basketball qualifier, whether it's an overseas trip and tournament, you see some of these with basketball teams from time to time. And these are typically really good opportunities for these teams to grow on and off the court. And it typically makes them better once it's time to play basketball in November. And I expect, again, that to just be the same here. So I think that this is going to only benefit them moving forward. And I look forward to seeing how they do, Eddie. It's an interesting setup. You mentioned it. You got half court, 3-on-3. Up to 21, 12-second shot clock. I mean, that's going to be interesting. That's going to be a fun little brand of basketball. That sounds like something that we would do at a pickup game in college. Would be something like that. Go out to the Putnam courts. Okay, you have 12-second shot clock. You know, you're gonna do a little 3-on-3. First 21, call your own fouls. Like, let's do it. Like, that is what that sounds like to me. But that's going to be a good time for them. Also, side note that is completely unrelated. I did not know the Glenn twins went to Barstow until I was actually looking into it. And, you know, I played against Barstow all the time, Eddie, when I was in middle school and high school. I can't tell you how many times I played in that gym. I had no idea they went to Barstow. You learn something new every day. So... that had nothing to do with this podcast, but I just wanted to point that out because I didn't know they went to Barstow. I will say this, though, on a serious note with the Glenn twins. I think it's going to be good for them as well because we saw them have their moments, and then we also saw them sputter a little bit at times. And they're probably going to need to be a little more consistent this season for K-State to reach the goals they want to reach. You mentioned, obviously, Taylor Lauterbach, but I think that this opportunity for the Glenn twins and Serena Sundell is going to be incredibly vital to them and helping them take the next step that they need to take for this basketball team to really be able to contend for a Big 12 championship this year.
And we're still in another name in here that K-State fans are familiar with, Emily Ebert as well, in that front court as well. So let's not forget her in that mix is back as well. So pretty much you bring back everybody back and you add this piece, Gabby Gregory from Oklahoma, transferring in here to hopefully contribute to what could be a good season for the women's basketball team, kind of to build on what they did last year. So I know it's a little early, but I've told you many, million times already, I'm pretty bullish about this team. They could be doing some big things when women's basketball rolls around here in later on this fall. So yeah, could be big. So definitely I'm looking forward to see what they do there. Little have some fun time, 3-on-3. We'll see how those girls do. Obviously, I have it covered on the Pro Project Podcast daily next week. Or once I know the results of it, I'll probably have one extra daily on Sunday morning, somewhere like that. But no, for sure, Monday for sure, about women's basketball as well. So looking forward
to it. Eddie is going the extra step for you all. He's taking the extra step for the listeners because he cares about you that much.
I do. That's right, Alex. That is correct, K-State Nation. We have entered the red zone here on episode 108 of the Pro Project Podcast, weekly edition as we're recording this on Friday, July 8th, 2022. Eddie Greer in Manhattan, Kansas. Alex is in San Diego, California for the podcast, and I have two in the deck here we're going to touch on real quick, obviously. The first one is in your neighborhood, Alex, more like the Portland Trailblazers. Damian Lillard, he ended up re-signing a two-year contract, returning to Portland, $122 million contract extension. That actually ties him with the franchise. We'll tie him with the franchise through the 26-27 season. 2026-27 season. That's a tongue twister there as well. And this team, this Blazer team, you know a lot more, obviously, because you're a fan of these guys. 27-55, which was 13th in the Western Conference a year ago. You talked about them in previous editions of the podcast here. They're trying to rebuild, it looks like, a little bit there. They made a trade, it looks like, 2 weeks ago for Jeremy Grant, it looks like, there. And they drafted Shaedon Sharpe, who was 7th pick in the NBA draft recently there. I don't know much about Sharp, but you probably do because that's your team over there. But anyways, what do you think? What do you think about your player coming back for his 2-year $122 million extension? That's a lot of money. How do you feel? How you feel about that?
Over $60 million a year.
Yeah, how you feel about that?
So with Portland, I will say this kind of as the that's just kind of the disclaimer for last year is because people probably don't know. I don't know how many people do know, but Portland made the playoffs 9 years in a row before last year, and last year was the first time. Yeah, they hadn't made the playoffs in 9 years. And it was intentional. It was an intentional 27-55. They started the season early, got off to kind of a slow start. Dame, his abdomen was hurt, and he ended up having to have a core muscle surgery. They went ahead and just shut him down for the year. And then they ended up getting rid of their GM finally, which, look, they went to the playoffs 9 years in a row, but it was time for him to go. So he went. They brought in a competent GM, and that GM knew that the roster could not compete the way that it was built. So he traded him away, and he cleaned the books and did that type of thing, and intentionally tanked to try to get a good draft pick. And so I think that Eddie, they'll bounce right back this year. I think that they'll be a playoff team. I don't really think there's much doubt in my mind. They're not going to contend for an NBA title or anything like that. I don't think that they're at that. I don't think that they're at that point. I think that they'll be probably a 5-8 seed-ish type team this year would be my guess, and then it may take them a year or two to get a little higher than that. I think that they were trying to trade that number 7 pick for OG Anunoby in Toronto. That's what they were trying to do. But they ultimately couldn't quite get the deal that they wanted on that. They were also looking to trade possibly for John Collins out in Atlanta in your neck of the woods.
Yes, he told me. Yep, I
but
heard
they
that.
But they couldn't quite get the deal again.
Nope.
That they wanted. And they really did have their sights set on OG Anunoby. That was really who they wanted. John Collins was kind of a contingency plan for them. Because if they were going to get John Collins, they still wanted a first-round pick. That was something that they really wanted. The only way that they were going to give up a first-round pick and not get one back is if they got OG there from the Raptors. They also signed Gary Payton, the second or the third. I don't know, second, third.
That was the second.
Yeah, but see, he was really good for the Warriors there in that finals run. So that was a really nice piece for them to get to. I think that he'll be really good for them. Their biggest problem, Eddie, is they're just small. They're a small team. They don't have enough height. The Jeremy Grant pickup was a good one. They re-signed Nurk. They signed Anthony Simons to a long-term deal. I think he's a star in the making, guard as well. So, and Shaedon Sharpe, I think that he's got a ton of upside. There's just question marks with him because he didn't play college ball. He went to Kentucky and he didn't end up playing. And so his ceiling is really high. I think he's got superstar potential. But there's just some question marks, which is why I think he slipped to 7. If he would have gone back to Kentucky and he had played, there were some people that said he could have been the number one pick this upcoming year if he would have had a full, healthy season. So I think that it ended up being a good pick for Portland. The only problem is it's not going to be an immediate impact player because, as I mentioned, Portland's going to be better this year. So there's not going to be a lot of minutes available. So he's going to probably struggle to see the court. And maybe that's not the worst thing in the world, but I think that he will probably see anywhere from 5 to 10 minutes a game. I really think that that's probably all he'll see, especially because, again, Portland at the guard position. They've got Damian Lillard. They've got Anthony Simons. They've got Josh Hart. They've got a nice array of guards there. And then when you look down at the middle and the bottom, they've gotten to see a little at the 3. They got Justice Winslow that can do 3 or 4. It's just kind of hard to find minutes there, but I do think he'll find some minutes. When it comes to Dame in particular, there's no doubt in my mind it was the right move. Are you overpaying a little bit? Sure, probably. $60 million for a guard in the 30s, that's a lot. But look, Dame is, he's Portland basketball. He's Portland basketball, and he is, he's done so much for that team, so much for that franchise. I absolutely want to see Dame play his entire career in Portland, retire a Blazer. Dame's my favorite NBA player. It's not even close. Love me some Dame, Eddie. Love me some Dame. And so he deserves it. It is 100% deserved. And I'm really happy that he got it. I'm really happy that he's locked in, really here for the next, 5 seasons now, with the team. And, look, that doesn't mean that they can't, trade him at some point if he decides he wants to get traded or the team decides it's best for them to trade him. But, I think that it is another step in the direction of him kind of being a Dirk Nowitzki type of player, who I know that he that is his preference, to play his entire career in Portland if that is the way the cards line up. There's been a ton, Eddie, tons of talk the last couple of years around Damian Lillard and Portland trading Damian Lillard, and I have just not understood it, why people think that Damian Lillard is an option in a trade. I've never understood it. Portland's never looked to trade him. He's never asked for a trade. He's literally committed for the next 5 years now in Portland. He just signed a deal. I just don't understand. I don't understand it. Look, would it surprise me, Eddie, if Dame asked for a trade in a year or two because he doesn't think that this team is going to be able to compete for a championship within his window? Wouldn't shock me. Wouldn't shock me if we see that in a year or two. I get it. I'd understand it. And, you know, it would be what it is. But I just don't get it. I don't understand the last couple years, this whole obsession over it, like he's on the trading block. Like, he's not on the trading block. Like, get out of here, Henry Abbott. Like, get out of here. Chris Haynes. Actually, I like Chris Haynes, but he did say that. And get out of here, everyone who was trying to float that stuff. Literally, Eddie, this last year, there was a game in Philadelphia. They were chanting. The crowd in Philadelphia was chanting Dame's name as a 76er. What on earth? I just don't get it. I don't understand it, but you know what? Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, Eddie. All that matters is when he's in L.A., I'll be up there. I'll go see him. I'll chant Dame Dalla from the rafters, because that's probably where I'll be sitting. And that will be that. But no, good for Dame. Happy for him. And happy for his family. And look forward to the Portland. I think they're going to be a fun team, Eddie. I think they're going to be a fun team to watch again. I think they're going to be incredibly... do I think they're going to compete for championship? No. They're probably going to be a first-round exit type team. That would be my guess. But they've put themselves in a position where their team makes more sense now than it did this last year and the year before. And I think that they're on a path to being a potential legitimate contender in 2-3 years if they can continue with the momentum that they've really had since the trade deadline.
You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
Good stuff there, good stuff there. And this is the Purple Project Podcast, where we talk all things K-State. And gonna pivot real quick here, and we're gonna finish. I have two quick things real quick before we close this podcast out. Episode 108 of the Purple Project Podcast, weekly edition, second one of the week. If you have not downloaded and check out episode 107, might want to do that before listening to this one. Good stuff there. Obviously still celebrating Avery Johnson commit here to K-State next season. Meanwhile, to the Diamond here at K-State. Yesterday, Pete Hughes went out, obviously, and he went to work a little bit. He ended up getting a new pitching coach, Rudy Darrow. So a little bit about him. He's going to be a new K-State baseball coach next season. He is from Perkins, Oklahoma. Darrow graduated from Nicholls State back in 2006 with a bachelor's degree in general studies as well. He also received his associate's degree in liberal arts in Labette Community College in 2004 as well here. And he was a part recently, a lot more on him down the road, but I just wanted to bring his announcement up here as well. In a little press release there from Coach Hughes, quote, "We are beyond excited to welcome Rudy and Jessica and their family to K-State." And then Keith Dickens here saying, quote, Rudy embodies everything we stand for here at Kansas State. He's fiercely loyal, a family man, extremely passionate, and has an unrivaled work ethic. I am quite confident that with Coach Darrow, our pitching staff will be as mentally tough and prepared as any staff in the country. He has a track record of maximizing all his abilities, both as a player and as a coach. Programs and pitching staffs get better with Coach Darrow. We've hired one of our own. It's the perfect fit for our community, department, and program. End quote. There as well. Darrow has some Kansas roots in his college career that began at Labette Community College all the way back in 03, where he spent two seasons as both a catcher and a pitcher. He transferred to Nicholls State and led the Colonials with six saves and 20 relief appearances in 2006. He boasted a 4.43 ERA and 20 strikeouts his senior season before being drafted, folks, to the Detroit Tigers in the 32nd round of the 06 MLB first-year player draft there as well. And, of course, after his professional, I know I'm fast-forwarding a little bit here. Following his professional career, Darrow returned to his alma mater, in 2010 as Nicholls State's volunteer assistant and was promoted to assistant and pitching coach in 2011. The Colonials lowered their team ERA in each of Darrow's four seasons as their 4.18 earned run average in 2013 was the program's lowest in 15 seasons at that program. Wow. That's something else there as well. That's just kind of a picture perfect there as well. Okay, so Darrow and Pete Hughes saw three Sooner arms taken in a 2016 MLB draft there. That's a little side note here. Alec Hansen, second round, Chicago White Sox. Jake Elliott, the 15th round, Chicago White Sox again. And Alex Daniel, 19th round to the Texas Rangers there as well. And then Darrow moved on to serve as a pitching coach at New Orleans for four more seasons in 2018. He led the Privateers to 580 strikeouts, a school in Southland Conference record, and ranked 21st nationally with average of nine strikeouts per nine innings there. His staff turned in a 4.31 ERA in the 2018 season and a 4.43 ERA in 2017. So looks like Pete Hughes here coming off of another inconsistent baseball season, made a good hire here, obviously. I can dive on in to a lot more of this later. But yes, that was big news coming out of the baseball. Alex there, Rudy Darrow, now the pitching coach here. New pitching coach to the staff at K-State. What do you think of the hire?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a good hire, Eddie. I saw it as well. The note on that, which, fun fact, is I hope this wouldn't get me fired for my job. But, Eddie, at working in PR, I cannot tell you how many press release quotes I draft for people who are actually quoted in press releases. I write all of them. So it's so funny. Every time I hear someone reference like a press release, I'm always thinking, like, I wonder if they actually wrote that. I don't know if they did. Someone probably ran across their desk. Look good. Yeah, stamp approval. Okay, cool. Go with it. I think it's a good hire. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You mentioned the track record. Obviously, a really good track record. Got experience, and look, I think the K-State. You look at their pitching last year. We talked about it. They gave up too many walks. They hit too many batters, and just too many free bases. And that's something that this pitching staff needs to do a better job of cutting down on. In my opinion, this upcoming year, that fielding were really the two biggest things, in my opinion, for them to address. I think that this is a good step in the right direction. I think that his first job is going to be, in fact, to try to limit just that. Put this staff in a position to throw strikes and make teams earn their way on base. And so that's going to be job number one, in my opinion. And then also just develop these pitchers. You want somebody in there who can develop these pitchers from when they come into this program, come into the program to when they leave the program, that they're better pitchers than what they were when they started, because that's going to obviously benefit your baseball program. So I think it's like you said, I think it's a good hire. I don't think he's got his work cut out for him, because Casey definitely got some good arms, but there's some work to do. I think that's fair to say, and I think he's up to the challenge, and we'll see what happens. We'll see if they can come out and clean some of the things up that they did on the mound last year that kind of bit him in the rear, and just excited to see what he does, Eddie.
Yep. Congratulations. Welcome to the fam, Rudy Darrow. More on him later on this year on the podcast. I just wanted to bring that on here because that took place just yesterday. And final K-State no other night on his podcast, Mike McGurl is going to be participating in the Purple and Black part of the K-State Legends game in Wichita, taking place at the Charles Cook Arena July 22nd. So Friday's a Friday night, July 22nd. So that's a big news coming out for K-State alum Mike McGurl. Obviously, here an honorable mention last season. He's going to be taking place in that game, and we're thinking about going down there.
Look at that roster. Holy moly. Jacob Boland, Bill Walker, now known as Henry Walker. You've got Mike McGurl now on that team. That team is loaded this year, Eddie.
Yeah, so we're definitely thinking about going down there. We'll have to see how our schedule goes. But I honestly haven't checked, to be honest with you, who's on those teams. But damn, that's...
Yes. No, the K-State team is looking good. To fill you in on kind of who they're targeting. Not targeting. If I could pull it up here, Eddie. As I mentioned, they've got Jacob Boland, who is going to be participating. I just mentioned Bill Walker, now known as Henry Walker. You're gonna have Cam Stokes. You're gonna have Cam Stokes down there. Justin Edwards, we remember Justin Edwards. Gonna have Martavius Irving. He's been a part of that every year. You just mentioned Mike McGurl. They're also gonna have Gip. Gip's gonna be down there, and then there's gonna be a couple players that didn't play for K-State as well: Trevor Gaskins, Terrence Joyner, Tamron Dawson, and Khalid Thomas. So some non K-State players that are joining there as well. But that's a pretty that's a good roster, Eddie. That's the best roster I can remember yet for them in that tournament.
That is a loaded roster there for K-State right there. Jacob Pullen alone.
Jacob Pullen? Oh my goodness. Just watching him play again, that's worth admission in and of itself.
Yeah, I remember Justin Edwards for sure. We all remember Gip. We know about him. We remember him. We talked about our that game. We know about him. Yeah, so there's some big names on that. Martavius Irving. Yeah, so.
I remember Marcus Foster on last year's team, too, which was just so funny to me. Seeing Marcus Foster wearing purple again on last year was just so funny to me. And I also, but this was not as funny. I remember them losing. I think it was a three at the buzzer. I think they were playing the Creighton team in the first round, and I think it was in Wichita as well, if I recall. And, I'm pretty sure that Creighton just hit a three at the buzzer to beat K-State. So hopefully that does not happen this year, in case they can make it further than one game.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that would not be fun. Yeah, listen at the buzzer like that. So, but yeah, that's exciting news for K-State fans who are planning to make the trip down to Wichita July 22nd to see the K-State Legends in action. Mike McGurl is going to be down there, and we're thinking about making a trip down there to see them, see that as well. I'll keep you posted on that in the upcoming episodes. So leading up to that, so we'll see. That's actually on the, what we've been recording these episodes, a perception of obviously the Emerging Podcast, episode 107, on Fridays lately. We'll have to see. We might have to move that recording of that week anyways, if that's the plan.
Good news, I'll say this, Eddie. This will probably make your life a little bit easier. Everybody will get to hear it live on the podcast. My schedule is going to be a little more free in the month of July. So it'll be a little more flexibility with me. I know I've been kind of tight here the last month and a half, but the month of July, I'm a lot more flexible, so maybe we can move things around if we have to.
Yep, yep. Hey, well, hey, we roll the punches, baby. We've been getting it in. Yep. We've been rolling here every episode, so getting in while we can. Oh, man. Folks, we have reached the end zone here on the Pro Project Podcast Weekly Edition, episode 108. Is almost in the books. This has been a definitely a weekly edition, jam-packed with full of K-State information. I know we're in the quiet season still, but it has been anything but quiet here the last, couple weeks here with K-State football recruiting and whatnot. Soccer program trying to get themselves going here, so a lot going on. It's only going to get busier here as things count down, and I haven't even mentioned school students will be trickling in here in Manhattan anyways as we get closer to the school session as well. So a lot going to start happening here pretty soon, but still kind of things are kind of quiet still though, but a lot of activity throughout K-State Athletics. That is for sure. Alex, any last final thoughts on this episode tonight?
Yes, I opened with Avery and I will end with Avery again, because I actually just thought of this like 30 seconds ago for some reason when you said students coming off campus and maybe think of it. We were talking about what will Avery do? Like, will he be there early and be there for spring ball or not?
Speaking of that, he's
a 3-4 athlete. Like, we don't know. He's a really good baseball player. He plays baseball. He plays basketball. Is he going to do it? Is he going to not? And I got a confirmation on it. He will be there in January.
Yep. So mm-hmm. That's what I heard.
He must be bypassing basketball and baseball this year. He will be there in January. He will be there for spring ball, Dylan Edwards. So we will get to see them hopefully at a spring game together. I'm pumped. I don't know about you, but I'm pumped about that because I really wanted to see him in the spring. I really want to see him in the spring. That was something that I just was so eager to see him out there. So got an answer to that. Want to let everybody know. Aside from that, Andy, I just hope that our listeners have a good weekend. I know for me, I will be going to the beach. I will be going to an ale house by the beach. I will be enjoying some more craft beers by the beach. Perks of living in Southern California in July. Perks of living in Southern California in December. That's all the same for the most part. But perks of living there in July, so that is what I will be doing, and I hope everybody else is able to enjoy their weekend, Eddie, I just look forward to doing it again next week. Everybody got double the action of the Purple Project Podcast Weekly this week.
They did, K-State Nation, double the fun here on this Purple Project Podcast this week. Make sure, if you're not subscribed, that's a perfect transition. If you're not subscribed to this podcast, you might want to do that. This is the perfect time right now. Obviously, things are sort of quiet anyway. So, other than exciting recruiting news, so definitely, you want your version of K-State all-around content, sports content, make sure you subscribe to the Pro Project Podcast, a.k.a. Triple P, for all your K-State content. On that note, that's going to wrap up for this edition of the Pro Project Podcast, number 2 this week, in the books. Big thanks to my co-host Alex Aiden, as usual, for coming on the show and providing his insight as well. Eddie Greer here in Manhattan, Kansas. Thank you guys for your support. We are rolling in and out of these episodes, and they keep getting bigger. Episode 108 in the books. On that note, enjoy the weekend. And you know what? We're going to let Alex close it out. Make sure you definitely go back and check out episode 107. And if you haven't checked out the recent episodes of the Pro Project Podcast, it's in the old feed wherever you listen to podcasts. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Odyssey, and a few more podcasting platforms. And yeah, that's a wrap from here, from Manhattan. So we're going to let Alex take us all the way out to the weekend, baby.
That's right. Watch her for commitments this weekend. There's some recruiting watching going on. keep an eye out on those football recruits. Hopefully the dominoes continue to fall. Enjoy your guys' weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Of the Purple Project Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll catch y'all on the next episode. Thank you for Go Cats. The whistle has sounded on another episode of the Purple Project Podcast.
Make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll catch y'all on the next episode. Thank you for listening. Go Cats.